The next case on our calendar this morning is the case of Blue Sky Real Estate LLC versus Sunrise Banks. Counsel, you each have 15 minutes for your oral arguments this morning. The appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Please note your appearances before beginning your oral arguments.
Thank you, Your Honor. May I please court, counsel. My name is Kelly Griffiths, and I represent the appellant in this matter. We have three issues before the court this morning. The first being whether or not a contract was formed where the consideration supporting the assignment of the mortgage had been listed as a bank in a bankruptcy as an unsecured debt.
Can we pause just for one moment? Would you mind lifting up a little bit better, and then the whole podium goes up.
Yeah, it will. It can't. It's
there's
adjustable.
There's a toggle switch, and then I could hear you a little bit better. Thank you so much.
And you can stand straighter too.
Yeah, we won't make you. Thanks so much. Okay.
Absolutely. Anyway, where the underlying mortgage was listed in the bankruptcy as an unsecured debt, and that plan was affirmed, effectively modifying that mortgage to an unsecured debt. Secondly, if a contract was formed, if there was consideration supporting that contract, should the contract be rescinded, where both parties were mistaken in their belief that the mortgage debt was secured by real property as a result, again, of that bankruptcy? And if a contract was formed, did the respondent breach the contract and the express warranties of that contract where the mortgage was, again, no longer secured by the property, and that they allege that $86,000 was due and owing under that mortgage? The facts of this case involve the assignment of a note mortgage to an appellant by the respondent in August of 2017. Prior to that assignment, the underlying note and mortgage was in default, and a default judgment was entered against the mortgagee and debtor. After that default judgment was entered, the mortgagee filed a Chapter 13 bankruptcy, listing the mortgage as an unsecured non-priority claim. Respondent filed the notice of claim listing their debt also as an unsecured non-priority creditor. And
Mr. Griffiths, you don't have a lot of time, and I think we're all aware of the facts. How do you deal with, let's go with the consideration issue. How do you respond to their argument that, well, it says, you know, whatever interest we may have, okay, so that doesn't say have, it says may have, and, you know, So you bought for $75,000 whatever they may have had, and as it turns out, they didn't have much of anything. So how do you respond to what they're saying is, well, you know, may is may, and, you know, it turns out, you know, was may not. So how do you deal with that argument, which, you know, I don't know, seems like something to me.
The contract still has to be supported by some consideration.
And the consideration is, for $75,000, like it or not, you're buying whatever we may have in it. And maybe we have something, and maybe we don't, but, you know, have a nice day.
And they didn't have anything. So I think under contract formation,
and they didn't say they did,
you still have to have some consideration supporting that contract. Otherwise, it's a gift, and it's not enforceable.
Well, it's unenforceable because of the existence of a federal statute that forbids anyone from going against these debtors after they've completed their bankruptcy proceeding. Isn't that right?
That's correct.
I mean, aren't we talking about 11 U.S.C. 524A, correct?
We are, Your Honor, and the you're correct that the bankruptcy court in this case, unbeknownst to either party, modified the underlying mortgage so that it was no longer secured by the property, which means it's no longer a mortgage. And that was the main reason, that was the reason that the parties entered into the assignment of the mortgage.
Was the actual mortgage part of the what was before the bankruptcy court?
Yes, the mortgage was, and again, under that federal code, the mortgage, if it's listed as an unsecured debt in a Chapter 13, and the parties don't object to the plan, as soon as that plan is approved by the court, the reorganization plan.
Mr. Griffiths, do you still have the authority to sue on the note?
No.
Why not?
Well, there is no, it was discharged in bankruptcy as well. So the debt underlying the note is...
Well, the mortgage was extinguished. I agree with that. So you're saying that, and they were, you know, an unsecured creditor. So you're saying you can't now sue on the note for whatever, you can't sue, I don't know, I forget who the debtor was. You can't sue the debtor on the note. And what case or what statute or what section of the code says that?
It's a violation of the bankruptcy code. I don't have that provision in front of me, but all the debts of the debtor that were listed in that bankruptcy are discharged as when the bankruptcy court discharged the debt.
But wouldn't that also apply to the mortgage as well? I mean, to the extent that the mortgage. I'm not sure I understand. If the bankruptcy court purpose is to take care of all the debts,
right,
and resolve those debts as part of the proceeding, and that proceeding has been completed, doesn't this mean anything that was part of that has been resolved and nothing survives the bankruptcy?
I think what you're asking is, or my answer would be, not in all cases. And in most cases, the mortgage would survive the bankruptcy. The difference here, and that's under that Simers case, the difference here is that the debt was listed as unsecured. Typically, a mortgage debt would be listed as secured because it is secured by the real property, the underlying property. Here, the borrower listed it, or I mean the debtor listed it, as an unsecured debt. The respondent agreed with that.
You know, and I've got the Stevens case, and that sort of begs my question. I mean, it certainly says the lien is gone, but I was trying to find somewhere where it says the note's gone too. And maybe it is. I mean, I'm
the underlying debt of the note is discharged, just like a judgment or a credit card debt or any debt that's listed in the bankruptcy petition is discharged. And I don't think...
Can I ask you, in paragraph 61 of the court's, district court's decision, it's on addendum, your addendum, page 15. In paragraph 61, it says, a mortgage remains against property following a bankruptcy. While the lien itself may not be subject to foreclosure following the bankruptcy, a bankruptcy discharge in and of itself does not extinguish the reality that the mortgage remains on the title. Do you agree with that? Is that accurate? I know we're at Rule 12, and I know we are, you know, what we don't have is a bankruptcy plan in this case. So I'm not exactly sure what all we know about the mortgage and whether it was extinguished or not, et cetera. So talk to me about that paragraph.
And what number was that paragraph?
61.
61.
15 of your addendum.
I don't understand that sentence. I mean, the mortgage was modified under the the bankruptcy. Once that plan was approved by the bankruptcy court, the mortgage was modified so it was an unsecured debt. And under the definition of a mortgage, a mortgage is secured by real property. And after that bankruptcy, it was no longer secured, so it wouldn't qualify as a mortgage. I point that out, I think.
Would it remain on the title, in your view? I mean, I'm just trying to understand whether you agree with what the court said in terms of factually taking the facts as you
and
allege.
I don't know what that means. If you run a title search, it's going to say that that mortgage exists, but also anybody closing that transaction is also going to do a bankruptcy search of the debtor and is going to should see that that mortgage was listed as an unsecured debt and the plan approved and was no longer a lien that has to be paid off. It does not have to be paid off for the Aches or whatever their name is to sell the property.
So do the Aches have the property now?
As far as I know, my clients attempted, through another attorney, attempted to foreclose the mortgage and then received this information from the debtor's bankruptcy.
So presumably, even if there was something on the property, the Aches could move to remove whatever cloud there is by saying, well, wait a minute, here's the bankruptcy discharge. There's nothing there.
And they won't have to pay it off.
Right.
And they could sell the property.
Right. Free and clear. And
yeah, I believe they actually redeemed. This was a second mortgage. They redeemed from the first mortgage foreclosure sale. I don't know if they got a mortgage to do that or not. But, they own the property free and clear of this, of the mortgage that's before the court right now.
Could you respond to the argument, and I think that the respondents made this argument throughout their briefing, but that in this transaction, the plaintiff or the appellant here was represented by attorneys. They were represented by attorneys, and that the law is clear that after a bankruptcy, that the bankruptcy injunction applies, and that what was sold here was you would get whatever, or that your client would get whatever interest they may have had.
So that
and that therefore you assume the risk in entering to this contract. How do you respond to that?
I believe that's the Costello case, and that they assumed the risk, and that was about that case was about the value of stock. This isn't about the value of what was purchased. Or this is about the existence of the debt that was purchased, and it does not exist. The mortgage does not exist. I'd also point out that Gartner versus Eichel was a case similar to this one, in that there was a zoning issue with respect to that property. It was available for all parties to determine. The person that was buying the property wanted to develop it. They couldn't because of that zoning issue. It was discoverable to all parties.
Well, let me ask you this. Why don't you just foreclose?
You can't. There is no mortgage to foreclose.
But what is stopping you from foreclosing?
There is no mortgage to foreclose. That debt is an unsecured debt. It's not secured by the property, so you can't foreclose it.
At the time that your client entered into this, was there knowledge of this bankruptcy proceeding?
I can't answer that. There may have been knowledge of the bankruptcy proceeding, but this case, again, is unusual in that it was listed as an unsecured debt, where usually it would be listed as a secured debt. So, I would have made the same mistake. There's no question in my mind that if my clients would have came to me and said, is this a mortgage that we could buy? Typically, the mortgage would remain intact through the bankruptcy because it would be listed as a secured debt. The underlying note would be eliminated, discharged through the bankruptcy, but you would still be able to foreclose that mortgage.
So it sounds like this is really about it's foreclosing on the mortgage, not even the note. that, right, I mean, this case is really about the mortgage then.
Right.
And whether the mortgage existed anymore.
Right. Both parties knew that the underlying note
was going to be disposed of, one, however one terms that, in discharge and bankruptcy.
Yeah,
right.
So it didn't exist.
And so by function of being an unsecured creditor rather than secured, you're saying that eliminated the mortgage, extinguished the mortgage, discharged the mortgage, whatever the right phrase is, and therefore there was nothing of value. They were no longer a holder as right. warranted, right? That's
yes.
your argument. Okay.
There's no consideration. I'd also look. And
the concern, I think, like reflected in here, and maybe that's a different question about what was known and what's in there in a non-recourse as opposed to what's warranted, because there is a warranty in there, is just that that's obvious to, I would say, to the purchaser of this, whether it was a secured or unsecured debt in the bankruptcy, right? I mean, it's apparent. There's nothing hidden.
It's discoverable.
We're not, yeah.
But again, I'd look at that Gartner case that I cite, probably both parties cite, where it was discoverable to both parties as well. And the court there found that mistake went to the very essence of the contract, as this one does here, and they reversed the trial court. The trial court's determination that the contract should not be rescinded. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Garth Govenda. I'm one of the attorneys for the respondent, Sunrise Banks. Your Honors, I think the court has identified a number of the issues that we take with the appellant's original case and then their appeal, is that this case is about a non-recourse assignment.
Well, and you keep saying that, but let's talk. I mean, bottom line here, they didn't get anything, did they, as part of this deal?
I don't know if they did or they didn't, and that's the risk expressly
I mean, is there any way that they could proceed on this foreclosure under the bankruptcy laws?
Yes, because they misstate the bankruptcy laws, and they misstate the holding in Symers. What Symers held was that, in that case, the bank petitioned for a bankruptcy court determination as to its rights and remedies under enforcement of its remedies as a secured creditor. In Symers, the bankruptcy plan specifically had language that stated that the bank's interest would be judicially avoided. That is completely contrary to what happened in this case. In this case, the bank's mortgage and the bank's claim are entirely omitted from the OCPAY's plan.
How do we know that? Is the plan... Do we have the plan at this point on a Rule 12?
The appellant has not provided that plan, no. I am familiar with it because I have been the attorney of record since the outset of this case.
So we need to, what we're looking at is whether a dismissal, like taking all facts in the complaint, is true.
They have not alleged that the plan, they have not provided the plan. They provided legal analysis about what happens, but they haven't actually cited to the OCPAY's bankruptcy plan, which is public record and certainly could have been provided and relied on, but they did not.
But what they're saying, I think, is, well, maybe I've anticipated what you're going to say, which is something remained of the mortgage after the bankruptcy, which sounds to me like a response to a factual, I mean, if what's alleged in the complaint is that the mortgage was extinguished.
Which is not factual. That's
right,
that's a
but
legal
we're on
analysis.
A Rule 12.
Yes, I understand.
Right, so don't we have to accept that as fact?
You don't. You can, and you should. You
well,
have
we
to.
We must,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so, if you're saying no, that's not right. Mm-hmm. Let's pull out the plan and look at it. What are we? Why are we considering that on a Rule 12 motion?
I'm not arguing that you should. I'm arguing that you don't have to, and that's why I'm holding up the non-recourse agreement that says you don't have to. Because this is a final and complete, unambiguous agreement. There has been no dispute as to our argument either at the district court level, nor has it been contradicted here before Your Honors.
But if there's no valid agreement, because of a lack of consideration, then your non-recourse isn't worth much to you, right?
Well, that would be the case, I think, in most any non-recourse agreement, but the non-recourse agreement does specifically state in two occasions that it is based on recourse. It has a recitation that many contracts do that is for good and valuable consideration. And then, as Judge Connolly aptly pointed out, that we were selling for $75,000, which was less than the debt owed. Whatever interest we may have, this is no different than a quitclaim deed. Whatever interest we may have, we're not going to warrant that we have any interest.
You know, and I'm just looking at 11 U.S. Code Section 524, and it says a discharge in a case under this title voids any judgment at any time obtained to the extent that such judgment is a determination of the personal liability of the debtor. With respect to any debts discharged. I mean, and then it goes on that there's an injunction that you can't go against this debtor because the whole purpose of bankruptcy is to wipe all these debts out. Well, is it, I mean, does it make any sense that you can discharge the note that's connected to this mortgage? And then at the same time say, oh, yeah, you can go ahead with the foreclosure on the mortgage, but, hey, the debt is discharged and you can't go against them on the debt. I mean, doesn't that run afoul of the bankruptcy order?
Absolutely not.
An injunction?
The two things are entirely not related effectively, that we cannot pursue the debtors personally. We can't garnish their wages. We can't pursue their assets. But when you are a secured creditor with a mortgage, and I think as counsel acknowledged, that normally, in most cases, a bankruptcy does not discharge a mortgage that secures against real property.
Similarly, but in that you agreed as part of the bankruptcy proceeding that it's unsecured. It's an unsecured debt. Doesn't that agreement affect and modify the mortgage?
No, it doesn't. That's an erroneous analysis of the bankruptcy code and the decision in Symers. Again, the bankruptcy code is very specific. If you look at Symers, that it specifically stated that in that case they were seeking what is called in a Chapter 7 bankruptcy, you can't strip liens from bankruptcies. That's the most common bankruptcy. I think that's what the most common that most people see. In a Chapter 13, 11, and 12, you can strip or cram down liens, but it takes affirmative action to identify that this debtor is seeking to cram down or strip this lien against this creditor. That didn't happen here.
Mr. Govenda, I'm not so sure I agree with that analysis, but isn't your more stronger argument is, you know, if you look at the representations you made, particularly 3 and 4, we said we're the sole owner and holder of the note and mortgage. We never said the note and mortgage is worth anything or that it has not been discharged in bankruptcy. And the fourth one, we represented the amount due and owing under the terms of the note and mortgage as of this date hereof is $86,443.82. That's what's owed. We never said you're going to be able to collect it. Is that sort of your strongest argument? Is that your strongest argument?
I think it is made clear through the terms of the agreement that enforceability and collectability were expressly excluded from the mortgage. That's at the bottom of page 1 of the agreement. Right above that.
The non-recourse stuff. You're saying, well, we're not making any representations that you can collect it or that it's enforceable. We're just saying, we have a note. Under that note, it says it's worth $86,000. But good luck.
Effectively, yes.
Okay.
So
what are they buying?
They're buying the right to foreclose on that mortgage.
That may be worthless.
And
that is worthless.
Right.
Let's be candid.
We have to go back to.
And is that just tough luck?
I don't know.
Buyer beware.
Effectively,
you should do your due diligence. Boy,
yes.
We got away with murder.
Yes. Blue Sky came to the bank, not the other way around. There's not a, the bank is not hanging out a shingle and offering mortgages. Rather, there are a number of these investors, especially in this financial market, that come around having seen these kind of debts that people may have now have equity in properties that they didn't 7 years ago. And that they're seeking to recoup that and buy these things at a discount from banks. And it happens every day.
In order to then go forward and foreclose on them.
Absolutely.
And what I'm still struggling with, if we take the complaint as true, that they could not foreclose on this, given what happened in this particular plan, which is not yet in evidence, it's not, you know, it's just, we're on a Rule 12, the complaint. Are you still saying that warranty that was given, that the amount in due, that we're the holder of the mortgage and the amount due and owing under the mortgage is $86,000, that even if it's fully extinguished in bankruptcy, that those representations, those warranties remain true? Or are you saying there is something to do with the mortgage and that's why they're wrong? They can foreclose. I mean, are you agreeing they can't foreclose? We're taking that as true, and even so, these warranties are accurate.
I think there's two different things. Okay. We have to take as true that their position that they can't foreclose. But they've done a great deal of legal analysis with respect to the bankruptcy and the effect thereof that is not contained in their complaint, and I take objection to it because it's flawed. So I think they're two different arguments that no matter what, again, buyer beware, they took this subject to the fact that they may not be able to enforce this mortgage. That is expressly what the agreement says.
And so even a mortgage that is, for purposes of argument, extinguished by a bankruptcy in the particular case, you're saying that it's only that the seller here, even though there's no value to it and it cannot be, there can be no foreclosure, that the warranty is accurate, that the assigner is the holder and $86,000 is due under the terms of that mortgage.
Yes, because
knowing full well there's nothing that could be done to collect on it.
Well, not knowing full well, but I think, again, the understanding is that there was a judgment entered on the note, that then by operation of law, that judgment continues to accrue, so that this recitation is to that this is the amount that has continued to accrue at law on the amounts that are due. That has nothing to do with the enforceability of anything else. So that representation is true, and it is effectively a public information statement.
How does interest continue to accrue on a note that has been discharged in bankruptcy?
Because the judgment remains of record and of legal effect. Again, you have two different things. You have a bankruptcy bar from pursuing collection against the debtors, but you have a judgment that you can enforce as to the rights against the security. So they operate two wholly different spectrums in terms of how they proceed, and there's a mechanism in Minnesota if you want to, as a debtor, have your judgment removed from your record and effectively eviscerated, but they didn't do that. So then, of public record, this amount continues to accrue by virtue of law.
But I
don't think I agree with that.
I read the statute, isn't the judgment voided?
No.
That's what the statute says.
Which statute?
524.
No, it doesn't. It
voids any judgment at any time obtained.
No, precludes the recovery of or any offset of debt as personal liability of the debtor, 524A12. That it doesn't say that it is void. The judgment is not void because, again,
I'm quoting from the statute, okay, though. It says, void discharge in a case under this title voids any judgment at any time obtained.
Voids judgments regarding the personal liability of a debtor. Again, personal liability is different than security or, again, amount of debt that relates to...
Well, let's just talk about the note.
Sure.
All right. If the judgment's voided, does that basically extinguish the note?
No.
So the note still has some value and is still in existence even after... After bankruptcy?
The note in these circumstances remains effectively, same as the judgment, kind of a placeholder, that the note represents this obligation. It cannot be because of the bankruptcy bar that precludes pursuing personal liability against the debtor, but it does not preclude that the secured lender can pursue its rights as a secured lender as to, otherwise you would effectively extinguish anyone's rights to repossess a vehicle or foreclose a mortgage just because of bankruptcy, and that's just, that's utterly not how it works.
Is there any dispute in this case, though, that your client agreed as part of the bankruptcy that this was an unsecured debt?
I disagree with that.
All right. Well, they never claimed it was a secured debt.
They didn't.
Correct?
This debt,
am I correct?
They filed because at the time, this mortgage had no equity to secure it. That is different than the OCPAs affirmatively stating, Park Midway Bank, we are going to lien strip your mortgage off, and that would be provided in the plan. That didn't happen. So those are completely different
things. Wasn't there a representation made to this bankruptcy court that this was an unsecured debt?
The Park Midway filed a proof of claim that did not allege that it was secured because at that moment in time, there was no equity to secure the mortgage, meaning the value of the property was underwater at that point in time. That does not mean that legally the mortgage is then voided or otherwise extinguished from the property. As counsel acknowledged, it remains a record of title, and they have made no effort to seek a determination from the bankruptcy court as they did in Symers as to whether they can or cannot
I think, speaking for myself only, the reason they're not doing any more is, I believe the phrase is, throwing good money after bad.
Well, we are here.
you are. the Arxes aren't.
But again,
and I think they're bulletproof.
But the borrower has sent a letter, and then they take it as gospel that they can't foreclose. Again, that's just someone's legal opinion. They haven't gone and opened up the bankruptcy court and said, hey, Judge Fisher or Judge Constantine, do we have the right to foreclose this or not? Because that's exactly what the bank did in Symers.
Okay, so your argument, and again, I'm very focused on the procedural posture of this, is that whatever facts need to be taken as true in the complaint, they are legally wrong to believe that this is that they are precluded from foreclosing on a mortgage under bankruptcy law? Is that what you're saying?
I see that I'm out of time, but I'll continue since you're asking. I think they've alleged as facts things that are actually statements of legal conclusion and that the district court does not need to give deference to statements of legal conclusion with respect to a motion to dismiss. So
what's the legal conclusion that's the right legal conclusion about the whether a mortgage is or is not able to be foreclosed upon in this case following the bankruptcy?
I don't have a legal conclusion as to that. I think that is that what I'm explaining that the appellant has failed to do here, which is what, again, in Symers, the bank did affirmatively ask bankruptcy court to say, do we have the right to do this or not? And the bank said no, or the bankruptcy court said no, because the plan specifically said your lien was going to be judicially avoided, and they have not done that.
So if I may, Presiding Judge,
you may.
Aren't we still a little premature? Wouldn't that be the defense that you raised then in responding to it, maybe a summary judgment thing of, well, they haven't proved up what they need to prove up, what they allege. But isn't it, what's the response to why this isn't just premature? Because it's asking us, I think, and maybe it's fair, to do a lot of research into bankruptcy and the effect that this bankruptcy plan had on this mortgage when we're here on, you know, notice pleading, motion to dismiss stage.
Our response and our motion to dismiss is based largely upon the terms of the contract, and that whether or not this mortgage can be enforced or not, again, was a representation that was expressly excluded from this transaction.
Okay.
And based on that, there's no need for the court or the district court to have gone further, because whether it's enforceable or not is moot.
I have another question for you. With regard to this, to what occurred here, I know counsel for the appellate said the mortgage was part of the bankruptcy proceeding. Do you agree with that?
I think any mortgage that a debtor goes through a bankruptcy is part of the proceeding, per se, yes.
All right. Do we have anything in this record that we can look at. This is a Rule 12, but isn't it necessary for us to have at least an understanding or a document from the bankruptcy court or the final order to know what was done there?
I would go back to my response to Judge Smith that, again, from our perspective, it's a moot point because it goes back to enforceability and collectability, which we expressly excluded as any representations and warranties.
But even if we are to look at the consideration argument that was made, wouldn't it be necessary for us to have those documents from the bankruptcy court in order to determine if there was anything that survived this bankruptcy proceeding?
I don't believe so because I don't think it goes to consideration. The consideration is that they acquired whatever the bank might have, and that's exactly what they got. That I don't think that the bankruptcy determination is relevant. It's wholly extrinsic to the terms that the parties agreed to. They acknowledge that in their complaint, they acknowledge having notice of the bankruptcy, which is public information. They had every opportunity to make the conclusion that they've reached, or say they've reached now, that it's unenforceable at that time, and their attorney failed to do so.
Well, could I just want to play this out because I'm trying to understand all this. What if there is an attempted foreclosure? I mean, doesn't your client run the risk of being a claim brought by, the mortgagees here, or the mortgagors, I guess, that your client, by assigning this, actually violated the injunction because by signing it, you're basically going through the back door and trying to collect this debt that you couldn't do through the front door?
No, I disagree.
So I'm trying to understand how all this works because if, in fact, it's discharged, how does that help these debtors and how does this comply with the purpose of bankruptcy, which is to wipe all these debts free and clear?
And again, I'll go back to 524, which relates to the injunction applies to pursuit of collection against the debtors. It doesn't. That means again,
by assigning this, you're just saying, okay, I'm going to get it this way, and then these people will be chasing you instead of us.
No, they have, as they acknowledge, they have absolutely zero right to pursue the debtor. This was an action to pursue the mortgage foreclosure. That happens all the time. After bankruptcy, that lenders, secured creditors, either themselves pursue foreclosure because
if they're pursuing foreclosure of property they own, isn't this a pursuit of them? Are you claiming that's not a pursuit?
No, it is absolutely not. It is black letter that pursuit of your rights as a secured creditor in that secured asset. There's no deficiency that they can pursue. It is exclusively whatever right they have in. So if you have a $10,000 loan subsequent to the bankruptcy, the debtor gets a discharge, and you go after their car, and the car is only worth $5,000 after you repossess it, you have no ability to pursue those obligors for the deficiency. But you have every right, and you retain every right, in and to that vehicle to go get it, liquidate it, and apply it to your loan. Those are different stratospheres. The injunction bars me from pursuing you personally, but it does not bar me from pursuing the property that you properly pledged to me and I'm perfected in. So that's the different realms of the 524 injunction versus the 1327 have to be included in the plan to be stripped.
All right. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
And counsel, I did allow the respondents to go way over their time, so I'll give you some latitude in your rebuttal.
The only thing I want to address is my analysis of Simers is correct. He's right that the borrower in that case did file a motion to dismiss to determine status of claims, but it wasn't that act that made the debt unsecured. It was a confirmation of the plan, and that's clear in that case. And they cite other cases as well where it's upon confirmation of the plan where it's an unsecured debt.
You know, let's say for the sake of argument, Mr. Griffiths, I totally agree with you. The note has been discharged in bankruptcy. The mortgage has been discharged in bankruptcy. There is nothing you can do to collect it. Let's say, you know, and that's how bankruptcy works. Okay. So for purposes of Rule 12, I accept that there's nothing you can do to collect this money from, I guess their names is the Acbees. How do you get around the language saying, and you know what? We didn't tell you you could collect it. So unfortunately, you know, not you, but your clients bought a pig in a poke. And yep, they bought an expensive pig in a poke, but we didn't tell you that the pig was worth anything.
Because this
based on that, it's the, you know, based on the, you know, this agreement is made without representation warranty of any kind except as expressly stated herein. So that language, because I mean that's what I think is your biggest problem. So you tell me why I'm wrong.
Because this case is not about value or collectability. It's about the very nature of the asset that my clients purchased. It's the same case as Sherwood versus Walker that's listed in here where you have the barren cow. You still bought a cow.
Did you have this non-recourse language saying, and you know what? We're not representing that the cow can give milk. In fact, we're specifically saying we don't represent anything.
In Gartner versus Eichel, you do have that. You have
the non-recourse language.
You have a purchase agreement that says you're taking this property subject to the zoning that's in place. And both parties were mistaken about what could be built on that property. And that's the same thing as a...
No, it isn't. I mean, to say... Because that does get to mutual mistake. I mean, in that case, was that Costello? Is that what we're talking about?
No.
The zoning case. Did they have this... It's one thing to say... You're taking this subject to zoning, and as it turns out, you can't build anything on it. But it would be different to say you're taking this subject to whatever zoning requirements are, and we specifically don't warrant that you can build anything on this property under any zoning.
I respectfully disagree.
Well, then you tell me what this language means. You tell me what this language saying is made without representation and warranty of any kind. Except as expressly stated herein, including but not limited to any representation or warranty regarding the enforceability and collectability of the note of mortgage, any default or event of default or compliance with any applicable law or regulation, and is made without recourse whatsoever. What does that mean then?
It means that they are not warranting collectability or enforceability, but that's not what this case is about. This case is about the very nature of the asset that was purchased by my clients, just like Sherwood, just like Eichel.
And where do they say, where is in the four warranties they've made saying, and we represent that this note and mortgage has $86,000 of value, which you can get tomorrow?
Well, it doesn't say that, but it says there's $86,000 worth of value. And there's nothing.
Well, it doesn't even say that. It says the amount due and owing under the mortgage as of this date was $86,000.
And nothing was due and owing at that time. That's the breach of warranty, but there's also a mutual mistake with respect to the very nature of that asset is not what both parties believed it to be. It's an unsecured debt. And
even though they're saying before that we're assigning whatever we may have. And as it turns out, we don't have anything.
Yes, because, again, it's the very nature of what was purchased by my clients was not a mortgage. It was not a note. It was basically nothing. I have nothing further unless you have any other questions.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very interesting case. Thank you, counsel.